It's episode 177 of Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug.
And I'm Barry D.A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about a hodgepodge of topics from movies, music, TV, and other movies, clearly. Because that's what we do.
Mainly. And this episode, we'll be discussing the films Prospect, Overlord, Widows, and Instant Family.
As he looks at me for reassurance.
And possibly The Crimes of Clark Griswold. You can reach us at the Hodgepodge Podcast.
You're welcome for that.
At yes, thank you. At gmail.com. Or on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com. Look for us on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe. Head on over to Facebook. Search for the Hodgepodge Podcast. And look at our page. I still have to post the last episode.
Nobody's listening.
It's fine. It's incredibly late. The big news this week, Stan Lee died. Unless you're Bill Maher, in which case, you're just man children. Abby, our special guest.
I like the Stan Lee died. Squeak, 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 squeak.
Yeah, you're right, exactly.
I mean, he was 95.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, people are like, oh my God, Stan Lee died. Like, he was 95. Yeah, like, it's like that episode of Seinfeld when they're like, oh my God, I can't believe it. He was 95.
Yeah, what can't you believe?
So, so he passed away, sadly, and he'll probably still be in the next 57 Marvel movies.
That is accurate. He definitely pulled like a Tom Brokaw.
Yeah.
Gerald Ford is dead today.
They recorded a bunch, but people seem to think that the Avengers will be his last one, but I don't think so. He'll probably be Spider-Man.
I guarantee
least.
You that they'll CGI him into a bunch of stuff.
You think?
I think so.
Maybe.
I think so.
They might do the Daredevil thing where they just have a picture of him.
Yeah, like I'm not saying it'll be like a full-on cameo like we're used to seeing necessarily,
right.
But he'll make his way into all of them. Whatever.
Right. But that's the big news. And we're still living in a hellscape in America.
That is just accurate.
That is accurate.
Every day it's a little worse.
Yes. Especially for friends of ours that we have in California. Where that whole state is basically on fire.
Death toll is over 60 people now.
Something like that. And there was like 1,000 people missing.
Yeah.
Box office this weekend. We're recording this on a Saturday, but I think it's safe to say that Crimes of Grindelwald will be the number one movie.
I think it was 26 million or close to
the first night, yeah.
In the first day.
Night. First day, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's going to make a ton of money. And should it, though?
I don't know. It won't make it for me. I'll say that much.
It was just okay. It wasn't great. The ending is stupid. We have someone here who could discuss it with me, but she's not talking. So we'll move on.
It's not me. I didn't see
I said
it.
She. Unless there's something you want to tell the listeners at home that you come to a decision. Let's talk about Overlord. This is the movie from Bad Robot, J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot. Don't ask me who directed it, because I don't remember. I think it was like a pair of people directed it, right? I think?
Yes.
If I'm not...
Now maybe a pair of people wrote it. I don't know if
mistaken?
A pair of people directed it.
Let me look it up. Here we go. Oh, no. Julius Avery directed it.
Okay.
And... it was written by three writers. Well, two writers. Well, Billy Ray and Mark L. Smith wrote it. A lot of, I don't want to say no name people, probably like a few that guy people you've seen. Wyatt Russell's in it.
He's Kurt Russell's son.
That's right. He is Kurt Russell's son. That's right. He's been in other stuff. I remember him mostly from Table 19. Table 19, yeah. He was in that. And he's been in some other stuff, too. Pilo Abake is the Nazi villain in this one. He was in... he's been in a bunch of stuff. He's on Game of Thrones. He's Euron Greyjoy on Game of Thrones. But he was also in the live-action Ghost in the Shell. He was Batow. He was good in that, too. And Ian D. Casedaker, who is from S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he's, which one is he? Simmons? Fitz? Fitz? I forget.
Fitz.
Yeah. He's Fitz. No accent here, though. He's an American GI. Bokeem Woodbine is also in it. Kind of. And... but the main guy is Jovan Adepo. He plays Ed Boyce. And basically what happens is... Oh, also, John Magaro's in this too, who was in The Big Short. He was one of the young guys that had... what was it called? Brownfield Hedge Fund.
Okay.
And they were the guys that worked with Brad Pitt.
Did you mention the woman?
That's Matilda Olivier. Her name is Chloe. And she is a French woman who gets involved with the American soldiers. Basically what it is that these American it's set right before D-Day. These American soldiers are supposed to drop in to France and destroy this radio tower that's jamming radio signals so they can do the invasion of D-Day and
use Raspberry.
Huh? Yes, right. And then they discover something truly horrific is going on. And the Nazis are...
called Nazis.
Yeah,
it's already truly horrific. Okay.
The Nazis are experimenting on people and turn them basically into like living weapons.
Yeah, creating the... Thousand
year,
Reich.
Thousand Year Reich, yeah.
Thousand
year,
Reich. Year
Reich,
that's it.
And there's a lot of gross stuff in this movie. But
not as much as I thought.
Yeah, as an action movie, though, it's decent. It's good. It does...
But it's not an action movie. It's a horror movie.
Yeah, I'd say action horror movie. I'd say it's an action horror movie. I would say they try to take the war stuff, the soldier stuff, like fairly seriously, fairly straight.
It honestly to me felt like it was like one of those movies, and I say this not in like a terrible way. Mm-hmm. It felt like one of those movies that's based on a video game.
It did feel like that. It felt like it could have been like Doom or Wolfenstein.
Yeah, Wolfenstein. Yeah,
yeah, it totally did. Yeah, because it's that type of thing. It's like the monsters and they fight the monsters in the game. No, totally. I also thought there was going to be more, I thought it might be a little bit more tongue-in-cheek based on the trailer, and it really wasn't.
No,
it was pretty straight with the war stuff, and then the woman, Matilda Olivier, her little brother is a plot piece in this, and that relationship. And
I felt like, in this particular movie, I felt like they did a disservice by taking so long to get to the experimentation. And I felt like they should have focused more on the experimentation and like showed different things going wrong and that kind of thing. And I think a lot of that was edited because the who was it that played the doctor again?
Who played the doctor? Eric Redmond.
Yeah, Eric Redmond. Like he's well known enough that he's been in other things that I think that they probably had written him into a bigger part.
Oh, okay.
And then it probably got edited.
Oh, okay.
But I felt like for this particular movie, normally I'd probably be on the other side of this argument where you know, the more you hide it the better.
Right.
But in this case, I felt like show the monstrosities that this guy's trying to create more.
Right.
you know, the whole first half of the movie is them getting there.
Right, yeah.
And in any other movie, that might serve more of a purpose. In this movie, it was just kind of like all extra stuff that didn't necessarily need to be there. So, I don't know. But, I mean, it's a fine movie. There's nothing wrong with the movie.
Yeah.
It's just okay.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not terrible. It's a good. It's a decent, like I said, it's a decent action horror movie.
Yeah.
If you don't like gross stuff, you you'll hate it.
Saying, sure.
Because there is some gross stuff in this. But how about that lady that he found in the lab? That was fucked up.
Oh, the just
yeah.
That was also the ant too, though.
Huh?
The ant.
Oh yeah.
It was
But if that's up your alley, go see it. Go see Overlord. It's still playing in theaters right now. A movie that is probably not playing in theaters right now anymore is a very indie film called a sci-fi film called Prospect. Oh, actually, it is still playing here somewhere. Because I thought it was only supposed to be a week engagement.
Hey, probably not after this week.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Prospect. It's by the it was made by the company called Dust,
which yeah, they you were telling me about.
They do like little sci-fi short films and stuff like that, and post them on the internet and stuff like that. And this is like their first feature.
They did a pretty good job.
Yeah, it's yeah, this one was dual directors, written and directed by Christopher Caldwell and Zeke Earl. The film is about, it's set in the future. It doesn't, they don't
unknown
really
future.
unknown, indeterminate time in the future. But humans are still on Earth, but they've colonized the solar system, at least the galaxy. And what happens is, the world that these two guys created is very intricate and it's very cool. Had a real alien vibe to it, as far as the technology and stuff like that.
It's intricate, but also minimalistic. Like,
yes,
you don't. He doesn't like go into detail about it. You just know that it exists,
right? And like they have stuff where like they talk about it, like, almost like Star Wars terminology, where they're talking about how like if they had more money, they could go into like the core worlds and that kind of stuff. Right. They're out on the basically on the outer fringe. It's a Western.
It's clearly a caste-like system.
Yeah, like it is. Yeah,
there are socioeconomic levels,
right.
To the galaxy, basically.
And it's basically the sci-fi version of a movie we saw. We talked about in the last episode, Sisters Brothers, which was about them panning for gold at one point, and that's basically what this is. This father and daughter team go to this planet.
Want to find the unobtainium.
Basically, it's this gem that comes from this creature or something like that. It's and it's real specific how you have to get it out.
Yeah, I don't want to use the word convoluted, but yeah, it serves a purpose.
Right, to, you know, at the end it does. Yeah. And
which, by the way, good for them for going that route instead of like having the girl be like, "Oh, she just did it."
Yeah, no, that's true.
That would have been awful.
That's true. Yeah, that would have been bad. The father's played by Jay Duplass. And the daughter's played by Sophie Thatcher. It was funny because Dirty A, we're in the movie. He goes, "This guy's voice sounds familiar. Almost like he's like, what's the other one's
Mark
name?
Duplass.
Mark Duplass." And then I looked it up on the because we were like, we were like two of like three people in the theater, and I looked it up and I was like, "Oh, well, it's Jay Duplass." He got
like, "Ah, there it is. There it is."
But basically, while they're on this planet, they're supposedly like this legendary hall that's on this planet, and they're gonna go and get it, and then get there.
We don't know. He came across this information somehow.
Yeah, we don't know how. But and then they are bushwhacked, we'll say, by
some rogue mercenary types that happen to be.
Well, no, he's not a mercenary. He's
yeah, that's
he's,
not the right
he's,
word.
He's
they're also prospectors.
Yeah, yeah, and there's two guys. One you never see his face, and I was hoping he was like some kind of like Chewbacca guy,
yeah,
but you never see
like
his face.
Alien for sure.
And the other guy is Pedro Pascal, who plays Ezra.
Oh, wait.
Well, sort of. Yeah, he's also going to... It's also been confirmed that he's going to be the lead in The Mandalorian, which was rumored for a while, but now it's confirmed he's going to be in it. Also, who they also cast? Gina Carano, they also cast. And Andre Royo is also in this, and also is Anwan Glover, both Wire alums. Andre Royo played Bubbles, and Anwan Glover plays Slim Charles. Glover is also on The Deuce on HBO, which is also David Simon.
I don't know what we want spoilers.
Yeah, I don't really want to spoil anything.
Because something happens towards the beginning that's hard to talk about the movie without
right
spoiling it. So I don't know.
But that's not the trailer.
Beginning. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, with the father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's in the.
Oh,
that's,
okay. Well,
that's in the thing. Yeah. So what happens is they get ambushed by this guy, and then basically the daughter and Pedro Pascal get thrown together, and then they have to work together because they have to get off the planet.
Yeah.
As well, and the story goes from there.
The only part of this movie that really didn't work for me is whether it was the script or editing. You couldn't really get a clear idea of the timeline. Not like when it's set, but like how long it's been since X happened.
Well, she had the chronometer, and like she set it for 3 days, and then she would look at it every once in a while.
But for instance, when she runs away from the zealots.
Right.
And then you have no idea. It feels like, was she running for 30 minutes or for a day?
Yeah.
Because then the other guy, Pascal's character, just shows
up.
Yeah,
that was weird. And
you're going, what span of time actually took place?
Yeah, how did he get away there? And it, was it me that said that it had an annihilation feel? Or did you say that too?
I said that.
It had like an annihilation feel to it. Yeah.
And also, I get that he would have been greedy, but if he had killed those zealots, he would have taken that
stuff
that they had, and then they wouldn't have even needed the rest of the bounty. They could have just gone to the ship. They needed the ship.
They needed the ship, right. Yeah, because her ship was fucked up. It's a really good...
Did you mention that, by the way? The reason they're on a big time crunch here is because this is like the It's considered like a galactic shuttle,
right?
That makes these runs, and this is the last stop on the last run of this particular shuttle. It's never going to go there again,
right?
So they have to get up there when it comes back around,
or they're stuck there forever. Yeah,
right.
And so they have to get off the planet, and it was a good movie. I enjoyed it.
The premise was good. The setup of the world, like you mentioned, was done really well. And the fact that even though it clearly, they were very intricate in how they set up that world, it was still minimalistic in terms of the story that was told and the environment that they showed you.
Mm-hmm. I really liked it. I liked the dynamic with the daughter and the father and Pedro Pascal. And it was just, I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. But again, you'll probably have to catch it when it goes to a streaming
thing. It'll be on Netflix soon enough, I'm sure.
It was on what we believed to be a limited week engagement at the theater that we were at. And, but it was,
we
it was,
got special tickets.
We did. Yeah. They gave us special tickets. They were pretty cool. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. Way to go.
So, what am I going to do? Put it in my scrapbook?
Yes. Put in your scrapbook. Also, full disclosure, a friend of mine worked with a production company that partnered on this. So
that's the one piece I hated. The production.
So he was part of the producing team for this. So
it was a very good... I mean, it was a good film anyway, but
yeah.
A real good film for a first time out.
Yeah.
Production company like this.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Like honestly, I would like to see more movies set in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It's like that's kind of how I felt like after I mean, we're going from micro budget to all blown out stuff, but that's how I felt like after Blade Runner 2049. Sure. I was like, I want to see more in that world about the replicants and all that kind of stuff. It would have been you don't have to make it about Deckard and, you know, all that stuff. You could make a movie just about the world of Blade Runner. Yeah. Yeah, you can actually do that.
They're never gonna do that.
You can actually do that. You can actually do that.
A Star Wars movie without Luke.
Yeah. Well, guess what?
All right. So yeah. So check that one out if you run across it.
Yeah, if you run across it, check it out. If not, you'll catch it on streaming hopefully someday soon.
Yeah, you know, I'd recommend trying to catch it in theater just because movies like this deserve that money.
Another movie that deserves your money, but probably I have no idea why they put it out this weekend. This was really dumb.
It's a really odd
decision. Really dumb. Is a movie from,
I guess, Thanksgiving, the holiday season,
yeah, but I guess. But I mean, but when Grindelwald's coming out, but like, I mean, that like Widows, I can understand that because
that had to be the thought process. But yeah, to go up against
that juggernaut.
Now, granted, this is more of an adult film. I think this
is PG-13.
No. I'm sorry. I don't mean like content wise. I don't mean like what it's rated, but I mean content wise, it's definitely geared more towards an adult audience.
I don't know. I think people could take their kids to see this, and then
I think they could, but I'm just saying, no kid's going to be like, I want to go see this.
Oh well, no, probably not. That's what probably I mean. Not. But I mean, but families could go see this movie. Sure. You know, sure. We're talking about Instant Family from writer director Sean Anders, and this movie apparently is inspired by his own experience through adoption and all that kind of stuff of his kids. And it follows Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne.
Say hi to your mother for me.
Say hi to your mother for me, Rose Byrne. And how they're like this married couple. I guess you'd call them yuppies, I guess, to a degree. But they have a house flipping business that they do. And it hits them that they're missing something in their lives and they want to have kids, but they basically go the adoption route just because, you know, they realize that there are so many foster kids out there that need homes, you know, and they through the beginning part, they go through the classes and all that kind of stuff, and then they meet these kids. It's they're a little Latino family, older daughter, Lizzie, played by Isabella Moner, who was in, I think, the last Transformers movie, but she was also in. She was also in Sicario 2, and she's going to be also Dora the Explorer in the live action Dora the Explorer movie. Yes, she is.
Right. She did a really good job.
Yeah, she's really good. And then her younger brother, Juan, and who's played by Gustavo.
I like the way they say their name.
It's Jacob. No, it's just Jacob. It's Jacob. She was hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know that I've seen her in anything since Airplane.
I know. So Juan is played by Gustavo Quiros, and then their little sister, Lita, who's played by Juliana Gamiz, and she's...
Juliana.
So the movie is very it's very sweet. It's funny. It's really funny in parts, and it's cute. But the comedy really doesn't really kick into full gear until the kids show up. That's when they're dealing with all the parenting struggles that come with.
And I appreciate the first part of it too,
right?
Particularly in that, like, they don't paint the couple as like this kid hating couple, that
right?
Just,
right.
That just has this arc where all of a sudden they
right.
Oh, they just, we got to do. They just had other priorities, and, right? And then it just kind of, they're like, when they start thinking about it, they're like, hey,
yeah.
Like, it wasn't some like grand arc change, like in their personalities.
They're rescue kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like if you'd stop calling them foster kids and start calling them rescue kids, you know, like pets, like rescue pet.
Shut up, Pete.
That was very funny.
Yeah. See.
Yeah. But you're right. The humor certainly picks up.
Yeah, when the kids,
you know, show some up. Of the humor for me was pretty misguided.
Some of it, yeah.
Like, the one character who's in their foster classes, who only wants to adopt a black kid who's good at sports,
right?
And they like go back to that joke several times. It's like the running joke in the movie, And they make you laugh at, but I'm like, this is a horrendous person. Why would you even consider this person for adoption?
Yeah.
Kick him out now.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she basically wants to be the blindside lady.
Right.
And then the other one you were talking about, I think, was when they play the little girl saying racial epithets for comedy, but it's really just proving that the Fosters that they were with were abusing them, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it probably wasn't, that particular scene probably wasn't even meant to play as funny, mm-hmm. but it was put in a weird spot.
The way it comes across is funny.
Well, and the most egregious part is the 22-year-old with the dick.
Oh, like, yeah, like, that's,
why are you playing this in any way remotely funny?
Yeah.
Like, I get it, you know, he goes to jail and it's...
Right.
But why are you playing this in any way like it's funny? Like, oh, look, he's going after him. He's going to get him.
Yeah.
Like, this is not funny. That's fucking sick.
Yeah, no, it is, yeah. So in some regards, the humor is a kind of weird. But overall, it's a really good movie. I enjoyed it a lot.
You also have
Octavia Spencer and Tig Notaro are in it, as they're basically like the they're responsible for training the parents how to become.
They work for the foster system.
They work for the system.
Tig Notaro is hilarious as the kind of like the straight.
She's the straight man to Octavia Spencer.
Yes.
Yeah. The in-laws, the grandparents, are funny in this. Margot Martindale plays Mark Wahlberg's mother. She's hilarious. Rose Byrne's parents are played by Danny Noonan himself, Michael O'Keefe, and Julie Haggerty
from
Airplane. You're the same as you. I haven't seen her in anything in a long, long time.
Mm-mm.
She was freaking hilarious in this movie. She was so funny.
It's okay. It's washable. Mom, that's a Sharpie.
That's a Sharpie. And then she's having this hard time. She's got the whole thing on her face. She's like, I have to do this.
But it was equal parts funny and poignant.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because Lizzie, being the oldest, she was raising her brother and sister. And basically their mother was a drug addict and she's in prison and all this kind of stuff. So it's a struggle between her and the parents, Wahlberg and Byrne. And then it's also her journey to kind of accept herself and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good movie. It's good. Joan Cusack makes a weird but funny cameo.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You know how you know this script is decent? Because Mark Wahlberg's acting is decent.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Mark Wahlberg was good in this, so that means the script was good.
Right.
when Mark Wahlberg is terrible,
he will never elevate anything.
The script is usually terrible.
I was waiting for when the disaster was going to happen.
Right. Right. You were waiting for him to fight the giant robots.
Yeah.
With his bare hands.
Or any kind of natural disaster, like an oil spill or a mass shooting.
Oh, what?
And then I realized that Paul Greengrass didn't direct this.
No, yeah. I have to leave. I have to go fight this. It's not about these kids anymore.
And then Bumblebee showed up.
And then Bumblebee shut up. Someone, any of our listeners out there, or listener, please watch the latest Bumblebee trailer. And can someone explain to me when Bumblebee became a... Mentally challenged 5-year-old and not a robotic warrior that he's supposed to be. when did Bumblebee, because he's the smallest Transformer, when did that equate to him being a child? When did he become Simple Jack?
It's raining out my ass.
Listen, Flaming Dragon. Fuck face.
I'd say check that movie out.
Yeah, definitely check out Instant Family. And like we said, because Griswold is making so much money, a movie like this is going to fall by the wayside. I think on Friday it was making more money, slightly more money than Widows. But I think Widows is the type of movie that will hang around because adults will go see it in the weeks ahead, whereas this might this might wash out completely.
Clark Griswold, he does do a lot of crime, so it's good that he'll finally
be put
on trial for that.
He needs to be prosecuted for his crimes against the magical community.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one time when he drug a dog behind his car for miles.
Right. How many fingers? Three. Sorry, it's two. So stupid.
All right. Well, that's a good transition into our next movie.
Yes.
Which you enjoyed a slight bit better than I did.
Yes. This is director Steve McQueen's first film since he did...
Since he
did 12 Years a Slave, which was in 2013.
You're such a pessimist.
What do you mean?
Okay. How about 52 Years Not a Slave?
Wow.
That's I have to credit that with for I can't even remember the comedian's name who was on After Midnight one time. But right. Anyway.
The movie is called Widows. It's based on a BBC miniseries from like the '80s, I think, the early '80s. And it's about these women who are married to these criminals who are killed
thieves
in a heist, and the people they stole from say, if you don't pay us back the money, we're going to kill you.
Right. So the money burned up
in the heist. And then they take it upon themselves to pull another heist to get the money back and to set themselves up for the rest of their lives.
Plot's actually very simple. I mean, there's nothing.
It is. There are a few twists, sure, as it goes towards it, because the screenplay was written by McQueen and Gillian Flynn of Gone Girl fame, and this movie very much feels like a Gillian Flynn novel.
Except there are no crazy women.
I guess not. No, that's wrong. Jackie Weaver. Elizabeth Debicki's, yes, mother.
Okay. All right. That's
She's
true.
Crazy. That's the Widows are played by Viola Davis is the lead in this. She's great. She plays Veronica. She's married to one Liam Neeson, who plays Harry Rawlings. How about that first scene when they were just the very first scene? I'm just like, man, Liam Neeson, get it, I guess. I mean, that reminded me of like how people describe like Pierce Brosnan when he would kiss like the women would, and like, yeah, he like bites your lip or something. It's really weird. And like Liam Neeson's like straight on, full out giving her tongue and stuff like that. And I'm just like, did Viola Davis sign up for that? Was she like, yeah, this is cool? Or
Liam Neeson's like, I'm going to make this look real okay. Is that okay with you? I'm very method.
I have a set of skills.
When it comes to my kissing.
I have a set of skills to kiss. I have a
particular set of skills.
And I'm going to do this. Elizabeth Debicki plays Alice. She is married to John Bernthal, who is Florek. And he beats her. And Michelle Rodriguez plays Linda. And she's married to Carlos, who's played by Manuel Garcia Rolfo. And if you've watched the trailers, you see... I can never remember the actress's name. Hold on, let me pull her up. Cynthia Erivo, who plays Belle. She is the other... She's the fourth member of the team. She was recently in Bad Times at the El Royale, where she played the singer, Darlene. And she's in something else recently, too. Widows. She's in something else that's coming out soon, I think. She is not related to any of the gangsters. Carrie Coon plays the other widow, who was married to Jimmy Nunn, played by Coburn Goss. And there's a reason why she doesn't get involved in it, and that plays out throughout the movie. And then it almost reminded me of Heat, when
slow down, buddy.
No. When Danny Trejo dropped, and then they turned to Dennis Haysbert, right. And they're like, yeah. "Oh yeah, you got to be our guy." He's like, "Okay, fine, I'll do it." No, yeah. I mean, this isn't as good as Heat because it's also different because this is all about the criminals. Heat has like the cops and robbers thing, which this does not have. This doesn't follow the cops at all,
right.
Except for like one scene, I think, and. There's also a subplot involving Colin Farrell and his father, Robert Duvall. Robert Duvall was an alderman. The movie takes place in Chicago, and Robert Duvall was an alderman, and he is retired, and now Colin Farrell's running for his seat, and he's running against Brian Tyree Henry, who is also the crime boss that... the money was stolen from, that Liam Neeson's crew stole the money from. He's really great in this. And his brother is played by Daniel Kaluuya, who you'll know from Get Out. And he was also in Black Panther. And the character he plays in this is 180 degrees.
He's not
different.
Taking a shit.
No, he does not. That guy was scary as fuck.
Yeah.
He's.
It's like, are you sure this guy's not the crime boss?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. He was scary in this movie. But I will say this: I liked his final scene. I liked how that happened. I liked how there wasn't like this drawn out thing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like it was like he did this, they did that, and it was just
yeah,
and it's over. And I was like, that's good. I like that. Because usually they have these contrived, like, oh, well, now I'm good. I've got her. Now what are you going to do? You know, it's like, it wasn't like that at all.
I just, for me.
You seem to have a problem with how they were telling the story in the beginning.
The first 45 minutes to an hour, no scene was longer than 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it was just, the editing, I thought, was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just like, this happened. Then they jump over to this real quick. And then just to jump back. Mm-hmm. And it was jarring to me. And. It didn't do much for me.
Mm.
And it kind of took me out of it early.
Right.
I do not think it was a bad movie.
Right.
I just don't think it was as great as you liked it.
Right.
I thought the acting was all great.
Yeah.
I thought the plot was, for this type of movie, maybe overly simplified. Like honestly, I would have preferred to see almost more of a Ocean's 11 vibe in that they're showing how the heist gets set up as opposed to just everything seems to happen in the background.
Yeah, I would have liked that more. It was more about their personal lives than it was about
the planning. Was just not relevant to it at all. And they're just like, all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's time to do this. And I'm like, huh?
Well, we should explain why that happened. It's because this is a minor spoiler, but not really. One of the things that Harry left his wife was his...
That's not a spoiler.
Was his notebook,
yeah.
Which basically he plotted out all his crimes.
This is the MacGuffin of the whole movie.
Right, he plotted out all his crimes. And so basically what happens is they just take the plan for the next crime, and they say, okay, now we're going
to
do this.
We can do this to pay
these
guys.
We can do this to pay
back.
These guys and get ourselves paid.
And which, by the way, the other point is that actually it's not all of them. It's just Viola Davis
right.
that come after.
Right.
And she recruits the others basically
right.
by saying, if you don't help me...
Yeah.
I will tell him about you guys.
Yeah. 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 So her hands aren't clean in this. So it's really a lot. It's a heist film, but it's more of a character drama than it is.
It is. It's definitely more of the character study.
Which I liked. I liked that a lot.
It felt like
a novel to
me. To me, that was, because of the way it played out, that was more detrimental to me. Because while I would have loved to have seen that, I also wanted the drama of a heist movie,
right.
which I did not feel I got.
Right, right.
And the call the twist.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh brother, okay.
I liked that.
I
liked it because she didn't know for sure. She thought it was something else. I don't want to
with the dog.
Yeah.
Oh, she knew.
No, I don't think she did.
I think she didn't want to know. I think that's why she didn't open the door.
Because I think
we'll talk about it offline.
Right. Because I think later, the expression on her face shows that she didn't know for sure.
Okay, I disagree with you. But
see, I think that's what happened with that.
And then
I also like the other twist too.
Which one? I don't know what
of the place they were robbing. I thought that was cool.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, right. I thought that was cool too. So,
although, see, can't talk about this without spoiling it. Yeah. Although that really doesn't make sense if you think about it, and I'll tell you why. We can talk about that afterwards too.
Okay. All right. And I also like the part where Neil Patrick Harris gets stabbed in the throat and then there's blood all over the place. Oh, wait, that's different.
Wait, that's different. That's Gone Girl. Also great. Also great. But, yeah, this movie's definitely worth seeing. This is a movie both Doug and I were super excited to see. I felt let down by it. You felt vindicated. You felt like
I wouldn't say vindicated. I mean, I didn't...
That's not even the right word.
I didn't think it was...
It wasn't quite the caliber either one of us really thought
I was expecting another Heat. I was expecting another
Heat.
Exactly. And
this
I mean,
is not,
Heat,
this is
Heat
not that.
Is, but that's such a high bar for me.
It is.
Heat is one of my
it is, but we still
top
thought
10
it was going to be,
of all time.
We
but
still
yeah.
thought it was going to be up there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Heat is much...
This isn't a movie that will garner any award whatsoever from anywhere. You think Viola Davis,
that.
Maybe?
She could get nominated. I think Daniel Kaluuya could get nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Mm. Just because of his turn. I mean, that's completely... That's a completely different character for him.
It's a minimal. It's. I don't know.
It could
I'd
get
be surprised.
It could get screenplay, our best original screenplay.
I'd be surprised.
Actually, it would be adapted screenplay because it is adapted from the thing.
Of BBC.
It could.
I'd be surprised.
But it's a very. I think the headline was it on Collider or Entertainment Weekly. They called it a very crowd pleasing. Thriller, which I think is true.
Apparently not everybody.
But I mean, like, you can't compare it to Heat, because Heat is more of like an epic.
Yeah.
And that this is more of a very, it's much more personalized.
You used this comparison earlier. Heat is really like the modern day Western.
Yeah.
Like, that's really how that one plays out.
Yeah. The only movie recently that you could favorably compare to Heat is The Dark Knight, because it's pretty much the same thing, just with more... Yeah.
Which is also
hyper realistic
in both
characters.
Our top 10s.
Yeah. But this movie, I did like the personal story. Lucas Haas is also in this too. He plays a key role in this as well, as Elizabeth Debicki's character tries to cope with life. Because that's the other thing too. It's like these women, you know. I thought it was interesting to see how they were all dealing with
it. Was
the loss
it, it
of
was
the
character
like that.
Study was great. I just. Needed more
you were expecting
of the
something
other,
else.
I needed more of the other elements, too.
Right.
I didn't want less of that, necessarily.
Right.
I just wanted more of the other elements, too.
So you would have liked it to be possibly even longer.
Maybe.
Like Heat, because Heat's like 2.5 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
Heat's
almost like 3 hours. It's almost three hours.
Oh, yeah.
So Widows, we both agree, definitely go see it. But
I mean,
Dirty A says temper your expectations, maybe.
I do say that, but I will say this. It is awesome to see... female-driven cast.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Viola Davis is incredible. She's so great.
Yeah.
Like she gets downright scary with these women too. She's just like, don't fuck with me, basically.
Yeah.
And her dog's adorable. she takes that dog everywhere.
She loves that dog.
She takes that dog everywhere.
Speaking of
which, Crimes of Grindelwald. If you're a big Harry Potter nerd, you'll probably. Enjoy it to some degree. Or you'll pick it apart because it's a lot of wheel spinning. I mean, it's like The Last Jedi. It's a lot of wheel spinning and not a ton happens in it. It's too bad. But the cast is good, but you know, I just want my Jacob and Queenie movie. That's all I want. And I'm not going to get it. It sucks. It's all I wanted. Dirty A just showed me some great news. Big Mouth Season 3 is coming.
Yes. Great show. Oh, there was some other sad news that will get undershadowed because of Stan Lee and everything.
William Goldman
also passed away.
Yeah, William Goldman just passed away the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He was most people know him as the author and writer of The Princess Bride, but he was also a very successful and celebrated screenwriter. He did Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Which I'm surprised that's not more noteworthy.
Well, The Princess Bride...
some millennial thing.
No, not really. Princess Bride became...
Don't get me wrong, I love A Princess Bride.
Right.
But in terms of, like, the headlines were, you know...
Right.
Director of Princess Bride.
It's because I would say The Princess Bride... Cinephiles would care more about Butch Cassidy. Well, I don't know, because Princess Bride is a very beloved movie.
It is.
It's
it
a
is.
Very beloved movie and book. It's very beloved. What else did he write? He wrote Butch Cassidy and there was another one. That was another big one he wrote. Oh, All the President's Men. All the President's Men. Yeah. But that's the other thing too. Like the Princess Bride, he also wrote like the novel as well. But he was a great screenwriter, and he wrote the screenplay for Misery. I didn't know that.
Misery. That was the one I'm thinking of. Misery.
Yeah, Misery.
He did Absolute Power, which I loved. Anyway, he also did
Dreamcatcher.
Hey, ugh. The fact that we're sitting here talking about, oh, he did this one and that. I mean, he was a very talented screenwriter,
right,
and director in his own right, but,
right.
Yeah, he passed away. He was 85, 86, something like that, I think.
Yeah, 87.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it's too bad. Too bad he passed away, but he had a great,
and I guess,
great career.
I guess he just let people watch good movies or something. All right, Bill Maher, go fuck yourself, man.
What's so funny is that Bill Maher's like, oh, when you become an adult, you're supposed to read the books without pictures. I'm like, oh, like 50 Shades of Grey, that's a great book?
Right.
Go fuck yourself. There's trash everywhere, and it's like, and the characters that Stan Lee co-created, because
that's the one thing mentioned that up front is that you never you don't see cameos
right. That's the one thing that bothers me somewhat with the Stan Lee thing, because Stan Lee, yes, he's a legend and he had a very key role in creating these characters, but you cannot forget Jack Kirby and you cannot forget Steve Ditko, because the way that Marvel does their books is that the writer and the artist would discuss stuff, and then the artist would go and draw the story based on the plot, and then Stan Lee would come in and fill in the dialogue and all that kind of stuff. So you can say that Stan Lee, you know, created the characters, like their internal, you know, emotions and stuff like that, but you can't discount Jack Kirby Steve Ditko. You can't discount
Stan Lee did no more or less than those two,
right?
And yet he's always been the face,
right? Yeah.
You know, his name really can't be mentioned without Kirby and
right. I mean, it's just like you know, with Batman. You know, with Batman, everyone always created by Bob Kane. No. It's created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger, because Bill Finger came up with a ton of stuff that makes Batman who Batman is today, that Bob Kane didn't really have anything to do with.
So anyway, you know, RIP William Golden as well.
Yeah. And that'll do it for this episode of the Hodgepodge Podcast. We'd like to thank Abby for stopping by and barking. Next episode, we'll probably be talking about all these fucking movies that are coming out for the Thanksgiving holiday. Green Book's coming out. Creed 2, which we've heard nothing about. And
I think the only review I've heard is that it's not as good as Creed, but it still packs a decent punch.
Okay. And Wreck-It Ralph 2 comes out. Ralph Wrecks the Internet. And something else also. Oh, Robin Hood. Yeah, can't wait to see that. I have no desire to see that whatsoever.
I'll pass.
But yeah, so we'll be talking about something like that, and we'll see you next time.